Welcome to KHD Bible Study. My name is Emmanuel. I'm a teacher and an elder at Kehilath Haderach Messianic Synagogue in New York City. I lead a detailed study of the Holy Scriptures from a Messianic Jewish perspective, chapter by chapter, adding historical context to the events, people, and places. Each week, passionate people gather to read the Scriptures, discuss the significance, and ask questions that help to bring out a deeper understanding of the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. We hope you will join us as we explore and read the book of Isaiah. Thank you all for coming. Tonight, while it looks like we have a very short reading, you'd be surprised that the layers are much deeper than they appear. Those of you who have read ahead know that there's very few verses, but they're packed with material that has to be unpacked. It's a fact that some of the struggles that we see today begin in the pages of the Torah. Perhaps that is why the Torah is the light that illuminates humanity. Before we begin tonight's brief reading, I want to give you some context so that you will understand why Edom in particular is punished, why there is a special punishment for Edom, who is the nation, is a descendant of Esau. So the very first question I have is, Esau and Jacob were brothers. What was the fate of Rebekah's children? And why is Edom used throughout the scriptures as an example of the world's nations? So let's dig deeper into that story. The story of Edom and Israel began in the womb of Rebekah, who struggled with a difficult pregnancy. So let's go back and look at that account. And for those of you who are keeping notes, we're going back to Genesis 25, 21 through 28. Isaac prayed to Adonai on behalf of his wife because she was barren. Adonai answered his plea, and his wife Rebekah became pregnant. But the children struggled with one another inside her. And she said, "If it's like this, why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of Adonai. Adonai said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two people from your body will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other people, but the older will serve the younger." When her time came to give birth, indeed, there were twins in her womb. Now, the first came out reddish. All of him was like a fur coat, and they named him Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding on to Esau's heel. So he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when he fathered them. When the boys grew up, Esau became a man knowledgeable in hunting, an outdoorsman, while Jacob was a mild man, remaining in tents. Now, Isaac loved Jacob because he had the taste for wild game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. So here we have a family conflict that starts out very early, and as we shall see, dictates the events that make up our modern world in ways that no one, not even Rebekah, could have possibly anticipated. The kingdom of Edom came to be a thorn in the side of the house of Jacob. Edom is actually symbolic of all the nations of earth. Let that sink in for a moment. All the nations of earth. While Israel is not only symbolic of God's chosen people, but the people are also the bride of Adonai, having entered in a ketubah covenant. And for those of you who are not aware, a ketubah is a marriage covenant. They entered into a marriage covenant at Sinai, and they entered into a covenant again at Moab before entering the land of promise. As a matter of fact, if you look closely at this week's parsha reading, the weekly readings that we all follow, you'll notice You'll see immediately that in addition to the Sinai covenant, a new covenant was issued while they were still just outside of Moab. And for those of you taking notes, that's Deuteronomy 28:69. For the rest of us, we probably saw that phrase mentioned in the reading and maybe didn't pay attention to it because we're all so focused on the Sinai covenant. What this means is that there are two major binding covenants with the children of Israel, of which the house of Judah is one of the tribes. This also means all who are grafted into Israel by faith through Abraham and through Yeshua, the Messiah, are entered into the same ketubah covenants. Believers in Yeshua are entered into the marriage covenants of Israel, the house of Israel. Why? Because Yeshua reaffirmed those covenants and completed them. He purchased solidarity in both the lost tribes of Israel, the house of the Jews, and the Gentiles through the shedding of his blood. So, in one action, through his sacrifice, he bound Jews, Gentiles, and the whole house of Israel. Believers in Yeshua are grafted into Israel and bound by the same covenants as Israel. Now, I know many Christian teachers have failed to tell many believers the truth about this, but it's a fact. As a matter of fact, there are some congregations where people don't even look at the so-called Old Testament. They don't even look at it. It's considered old because they assume that somehow when Yeshua came, he created a new covenant that is different from the one into which he was born, the one into which he affirmed. Let me say it again. Believers in Yeshua are grafted into Israel and bound by the same covenants as Israel. Edom, who is symbolic of the world's nations, are to be wiped out as a nation, according to Isaiah, Ezekiel, Micah, the prophet Obadiah, and others. As we'll see tonight, Malachi states this, Malachi 1, an oracle, the word of Adonai to Israel by Malachi. I loved you, says Adonai, but you say, how have you loved us? Was Esau not Jacob's brother? It is the declaration of Adonai. Yet I loved Jacob, and Esau I hated. I made his hills a wasteland and gave his inheritance to jackals of the wilderness. Now, on the surface, we know that that's true because the nation of Edom seemed to have disappeared after the Nabataeans moved in. As a matter of fact, those of you who are familiar with Petra, in the southern portion of Jordan, know that there were buildings, temples, houses carved out of the rocks. And then the people just disappeared. And the Nabataeans, Arabs, moved in and took over those buildings. And then eventually they moved on as well. But the thing about about Petra in particular, and there possibly were other cities, is that it was extremely sophisticated and almost impossible to defend. I'm sorry, impossible to defeat. Many nations came through there, but they all had to pass through this narrow passageway to get in there. And in the process, the people of Edom were very effective at squashing any type of invasions coming through there. And you'll see that treated by Adonai tonight. So Edom as a nation are descended from Esau. If you read the scriptures closely, you'll realize that Esau intermarried with Canaanites, Ammonites, and Moabites. As a matter of fact, in the time of David and Saul, or shall I say, the time of Saul and David, the Edomites often entered into alliances with various Canaanites, the Ammonites, and the Moabites. And so there was a constant struggle. David did prevail over them. As a matter of fact, some scholars are not even sure how he was able to get in there and defeat them. But we know that he had help, obviously. What many may not realize is that the descendants of Esau did not all die or disappear after the conquest of the Nabataeans or the Romans. But in fact, they rose to power over all of Judea under the Romans. And the Brit Hadashah, the New Testament, they are known as the Idumeans. Many of you have heard that term. You probably have read it. You weren't sure what it meant. The Idumeans, they were primarily very urbanized. They adapted themselves to urban life in Judea. And surprisingly, they were converts to the faith of the Jews. So in the time of Yeshua, the Idumeans were considered Jews because they had converted to the faith. What many of you do not realize is the Herodian dynasty, which ruled Judea, were descendants of Esau. Herod the Great was a descendant of the Maccabees and the Edomites. Among his distinctions, he had the second temple rebuilt and expanded it, mostly to try to gain favor with the Jews, because even though he was Jewish, he was hated by the Jews. It was Herod the Great who tried to kill the infant Yeshua and ended up killing perhaps hundreds of baby boys. So here we have Herod the Great, a descendant of Esau, sitting on the throne of Israel, sitting on the throne of Judea. His son, Herod Antipas, or basically the son of the great Herod, was the one who killed Rabbi John the Immerser as a birthday gift. And he also took part in the trial that led to the crucifixion. So some people, when they're reading the New Testament, they're not sure. They think that the same Herod that was there in the time of the Magi coming from the east is the same Herod who had John killed. But it's because they share the same name, and the scriptures don't give us their Roman names. Herod the Great was the first, and then his son, Herod Antipas, or Antipas, was the son of the great Herod. One of the last of the Herods is Herod Agrippa. He died a horrible death. Let me give you the story of his death because that's kind of significant in a way. On an appointed day, Herod donned his royal robes and, taking his seat upon the throne, began a speech to them. You see, skipping away from the scriptures for a moment, this last Herod was very flamboyant. He lived a party boy's lifestyle. He loved lavish things. He dressed in gold and silver, and he polished when he walked into the room. So here he is, he's donning his royal robes, and he's taking his seat upon the throne, which, by the way, he didn't want. He didn't want the responsibility of the kingdom. It was thrust upon him by Caesar. The people were shouting, "The voice of a god and not a human." So his Idumeans, the other people in Jerusalem at the time, were shouting that King Herod was the voice of a god and not a human. Going back to the scriptures, immediately an angel of the Lord struck him down because he did not give God the glory, and he was eaten by worms and died. A horrible death. That's in Acts 12, 21 through 23. All right, so I want you to keep these things in mind. You see, God, Adonai, said that he loved Jacob and he hated Esau. And back when that was said, it seems like, well, Esau did some pretty bad things, but did he deserve, was he deserving of hatred? It's because we don't keep in mind that Adonai, our God, can see to your end. He knows your days. He knows the days that are numbered. He knows the actions you're going to take. Of course, we have free will. We can repent. We can change. But Esau remained consistent, and his descendants remain consistently evil, always looking out for themselves, always trying to put themselves ahead of others, even at the risk of killing many innocent people. Okay, so tonight's readings, they should be fairly quick. We're going to look at Isaiah 34. I'd like to have Rev. Andy read Isaiah 34 and have that Isaiah 34 followed by Shamash Jackie. And then we're going to read Obadiah. Why Obadiah? Because Obadiah was sent to give a prophecy to the Israelites concerning the people of Edom. Just so we are clear about our time periods, the Herods are in the time period of Yeshua. Isaiah is in the time period before the fall of the Northern Kingdom. Obadiah is in the time period of Jeremiah, a contemporary of Jeremiah. And he's speaking about the people of Edom when they lose their nationhood. All right, just so we don't get the events mixed up and think that they're all one and one. They're not. All right, so Isaiah is prophesying before the punishment of Edom. Obadiah is prophesying after the punishment of Edom, and he lists specific charges against the people. The whole nation was lost at that time. However, individuals and small families continued all the way into the time of Yeshua and after. All right, so let's go ahead and begin with Reb Andy, Isaiah chapter 34.
Draw near, O nations, to hear and listen, O peoples. Let the earth hear and all it contains, the world and its offspring. For Adonai is enraged at all the nations and furious at all their armies. He will utterly destroy them. He will give them over to slaughter. So their slain will be thrown out, and the stench of their corpses will rise, and the hills will be drenched with their blood. Then all the host of heaven will dissolve, and the skies will be rolled up like a scroll. So all their array will wither away like a leaf drooping from a vine, like a fig shriveling from a fig tree. For my sword has drunk its fill in the heavens. See, it will come down upon Edom, upon the people I have devoted to judgment. The sword of Adonai is filled with blood, gorged with fat, the blood of lambs and goats, the fat of kidneys of rams. For Adonai has a sacrifice in Bozrah, a great slaughter in the land of Edom. Wild oxen will go down with them, bull calves with mighty steers. So their land will be soaked with blood and their dust greasy with fat. For Adonai has a day of vengeance, a year of recompense for the hostility against Zion. Its streams will be turned into pitch, its dust into brimstone, and its land will become burning tar. It will not be quenched night or day. Its smoke will rot, will go up forever from generation to generation. It will lay waste forever and ever. None will pass through it, but pelican and porcupine will have it. Owl and raven will dwell in it. He will stretch a line of chaos over it and stones of desolation. As for its nobles, there are none there to call it a kingdom, and all its princes will come to nothing. Thorns will come up in its palaces, nettles and thistles in its fortresses. It will be a haunt of jackals, an abode of ostriches. Wild cats will meet with wolves. The goat demon will cry to its kind, yes. The night monster will settle there and find itself a resting place. A tree snake will nest and lay eggs there, hatch, and gather them under its shadow. Surely hawks are gathered there, each one with her mate. Seek from the scroll of Adonai and read. Not one of them will be missing. None will lack its mate, for his mouth commanded it, and his ruach gathered them. He cast a lot for them, and his hand divided it out to them with the line. They will possess it forever and dwell in it from generation to generation.
Chapter 35. The wilderness and dry land will be glad. The desert will rejoice and blossom like a lily. It will blossom profusely, will rejoice and joy and singing, will be given the glory of Lebanon, the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of Adonai, the splendor of our God. Strengthen the limp hands, make firm the wobbly knees. Say to those with anxious heart, be strong, have no fear. Behold, your God, vengeance is coming. God's recompense, it is coming. Then he will save you. Then the eyes of the blind will be opened and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute will sing. For water will burst forth in the desert, and streams in the wilderness. The parched land will become a pool, the thirsty ground springs of water. In the hall of jackals, where they rest, grass will become needs and rushes. A highway will be there, a roadway. It will be called the way of holiness. The unclean will not travel on it. It is for the one who walks the way. Fools will not go astray. No lion will be there. No ravenous beast will go up on it. They will not be found there, but the redeemed will walk there. The ransomed of Adonai will return and come to Zion with singing, with everlasting joy upon their heads. They will obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing will flee away.
Obadiah, Edom's arrogance and ruin. The vision of Obadiah. Thus says Adonai Elohim concerning Edom. We have heard a report from Adonai, and an envoy has been sent among the nations. Arise and let us rise up against her in battle. Behold, I will make you least among the nations. You will be greatly despised. The arrogance of your heart has deceived you, living in the clefts of the rock. His dwelling place is lofty, saying in his heart, whom shall bring me down to the earth? Even if you soar like the eagle, and even if you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares Adonai. If thieves came to you, if robbers by night, how ruined you would be. Would they keep stealing after they had enough? If grape gatherers came to you, would they not leave some gleaning? How Esau will be ransacked, and how his hidden treasures searched out. All your allies will force you to the border. The men that are at peace with you will deceive you and overpower you. Those who eat your bread will set a trap under you. He has no discernment. In that day, declares Adonai, will I not destroy the wise men from Edom and understanding from the hill country of Esau? Then your mighty men, O Teman, will be shattered, so everyone will be cut off from the hill country of Esau by slaughter, because of your violence to your brother Jacob. Shame will cover you, and you will be cut off forever. On the day that you stood aloof, on the day that strangers carried away his wealth, while foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were just like one of them. You should not look down on your brother on the day of his disaster, nor should you rejoice over the children of Judah on the day of their destruction. You should not speak proudly in the day of their distress. Do not enter the gate of my people in the day of their disaster. Yes, you. Do not gloat over their misery in the day of their disaster. Yes, you. Do not loot their wealth in the day of their calamity. Do not stand at the crossroad to cut down his fugitives, and do not imprison his survivors in the day of distress. The house of Jacob will be a fire, for the day of Adonai is near against all the nations. As you have done, it shall be done to you. Your dealing will return on your own head. For just as you have drunk on my holy mountain, so all the nations shall drink continually. Yes, they will drink and gulp down, and then be as though they had never existed. But on Mount Zion, there will be deliverance, and it will be holy. Then the house of Jacob will dispossess those who dispossess them. The house of Jacob will be a fire, and the house of Joseph flame, while the house of Esau will be straw. They will set them on fire and consume them. So there will be no survivors of the house of Esau, for Adonai has spoken. Then those of the Negev will possess the hill country of Esau, and those of the foothills, the Philistines. Then they will possess the territory of Ephraim and the territory of Samaria, while Benjamin will possess Gilead. The exiles of his army of Bnei Israel will possess what belonged to the Canaanites as far as Zarephath, while the exiles of Jerusalem, who are in the Sepharad, will possess the cities of the Negev. The victories will go up on Mount Zion, to judge the hill country of Esau. Then the kingdom shall be Adonai's. Amen.
Thank you to all who read tonight. Let's go back to the, let's go ahead and look at the questions. And I think we're going to end a little early tonight, but we'll look at the questions. The second question I had is, what is meant by Isaiah 34, 16 through 17? Is there a deeper meaning? Does anyone want to venture a guess what Adonai is speaking about in Isaiah 34, 16 through 17? Okay, I will give you a hint. Look at the first verses of Isaiah 35. As a matter of fact, Malka, if you could bring up the map of that region. Okay, good. Let's all take a look at this map to fully understand what's going on. Edom, for the most part, is, well, you can see the Dead Sea there, the end of it, that blue and green up near the top of the screen. Good, yes. Now, just east of there is where Edom settled. And we know Edom today, or it was wiped out by the Nabataeans. They disappeared. They moved into the cities. They adapted the Jewish faith for the most part, many of them, and they became a part of Judea. That area that you're looking at east of that area is right now, it's a rough desert country. It's a wilderness. It's dry desert and rock. Very little grows there. From there all the way over to the Negev, although the modern day Israelis have been able to bring water in from underground springs, and turned parts of the Negev into a paradise, practically. For the most part, the rest of that countryside is just desert, rock, dirt. But after the temple is built on the mountain in Jerusalem, remember I said last week, or I've said repeatedly, that this whole area is going to be terraformed, which means that the whole area, the whole landscape is going to completely change. If you look closely at the map right now, you see that there's clusters of mountains on both sides of the Red Sea. All of that land will be leveled. There's going to be a battle, which you heard described, and the bodies will be left there, but then that land will be flattened. Those mountains will be flattened out. And something amazing is going to happen. There's going to be a river that starts out as a stream that comes from the side of the temple in Jerusalem, travels through the Red Sea, and out to that little strait there, right at the edge of the sea there, which is on the right side. You'll see that the Sinai Peninsula is there. It has the Red Sea and it has the Reed Sea. So you'll see that that stream will travel from the Dead Sea, going straight down and into that gulf. And that whole area is going to be transformed. The land will become marsh and swampy. What the translators call pitch, and I forget the other term that they use, but it will become swampy like the Everglades used to be in Florida. I have another picture I'd like for you to pull up, Malcolm, if you can. I don't know if I have that sent, if I sent that to you.
Let me look. You send it to my email?
I believe so. If not, I'll just go ahead and send it to you right now. Can I send it to your text?
Send it email, because that's how you gave me Edom. Send it email. It'll be quick and I could open it right now.
Okay, let me go there now. Actually, let's see. There may be an easier way to do this. Let's see here. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Okay.
So while we're doing that, let me get Rev Andy to read Ezekiel 47, verse 5 through 19.
47 what? 5 through
19. Ezekiel 47, 5 okay. through 19.
Five
just
through
to 19. Give, yes, just before you begin. Just to give everyone a reference, that question pertains to what's going to happen to that former territory where Edom used to exist. And we're going to see it explained. Remember, he said to read the scriptures, take a look and see. So here we're going to go to Ezekiel 47, and we're going to see his description of that area.
Again, he measured 1,000, and now it was a river that I could not pass through, for the water had risen, water to swim in, a river that could not be crossed. He said to me, "Have you seen this, son of man?" Then he brought me back to the bank of the river. When I returned, behold, there were very many trees on one side and on the other, along the bank of the river. Then he said to me, "These waters go out toward the eastern region. They go down to the Arabah and enter the sea. When they arrive at the sea, the waters of the sea will flow and will become fresh. It will be that every living creature that swarms will live wherever the rivers go. There will be a very great multitude of fish because this water goes there and makes the salt water fresh. So everything will be healed and live wherever the river goes. Fishermen will stand by it from En Gedi to En Eglaim. It will be a place for spreading of nets. Their fish will be of many different kinds, like the fish of the great sea, a huge quantity. Its swamps and marshes will not become fresh. They will be set aside for salt on the river, on its bank, on this side and that side will grow every kind of tree for food. Its leaf will not wither. Its fruit will not fail. It will bear new fruit every month because its water flows out from the sanctuary. Its fruit will be for food, and its leaf will be for healing. Thus says Adonai Elohim, this will be the border by which you will divide the land for inheritance, according to the 12 tribes of Israel, Joseph receiving two portions. You will inherit it, each one like another, as I lifted my hand to give it to your fathers. So this land will fall to you as an inheritance. This will be the boundary of the land on the north side from
That's
the
good. That's okay. Good, Rep. Thank you very much. I wanted you to get an idea of what's going to happen. When that river comes down, it comes out, it comes from the temple as a stream. It passes through the Dead Sea, and it's going to activate life all along, all the way down to the sea. And that life is going to spread into the oceans and begin the cleansing process of the earth. That land was allotted from the very beginning to the Edom. If they had somehow allowed themselves to repent and remain as a nation, they would have inherited some of the most fertile land on the entire earth. I mean, if you're looking at the pictures right now, these pictures are the type of foliage that you get in what's being described. Literally trees growing up out of the river. He mentions, as a matter of fact, let me go there. Let me go to Isaiah 35. The wilderness and dry land will be glad. The desert will rejoice and blossom like a lily. It will blossom profusely, will rejoice with joy and singing, will be given the glory of Lebanon, the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. Those regions, historically, had massive trees. As a matter of fact, some of those trees were cut down and transported to be used in the temple. And when the rocks have failed on the Temple Mount, and there have been earthquakes up there, what is amazing is that the trees that were donated to Solomon to build the original temple complex were reclaimed and used to shore up the broken places from the earthquakes. That's how strong those trees are. They are still there holding up the temple platform. Those trees were massive. And that's the kind of growth that we're looking at taking place in what today is a massive desert environment. So when the Israelites came out of Egypt, he told them, don't go around to that territory because that belongs to Moab. Don't go to that territory because that belongs to Edom. Don't go to that territory because it belongs to Ammon. These lands were secured. They were given to them as an inheritance to the descendants of Abraham. And if the people had not turned around and attacked his people, if the people in those regions, in those cities, those areas, had not made it their practice to constantly attack Israel and Judah, they would be inheriting some of the most beautiful land on the earth. That's what we're looking at. That's what the territory is going to become. That desert is going, as he says, will be glad. The desert will rejoice and blossom like a lily. When he says that, he means it. Literally, the Dead Sea will become the source of life for the entire Pacific Ocean, or the Indian Ocean first, and eventually spread out to the rest of the oceans on Earth. That's what we're looking at. So that's why when you read the scriptures, you have to really dig a little deeper and understand that these are not just beautiful poems and talking of things that are going to happen, but they're actually him explaining to you, sharing with God, explaining and sharing with you what he intends to do for all the earth. Now, let's look at the nation of Edom again. Remember I said Edom represents all the nations on earth? Well, if this is going to happen to Edom, where there's going to be major battles, the armies are going to be destroyed, their bodies left in the ground, and then the grounds reformed. Imagine an entire earth reformed. What will happen to those people? What will happen to those nations that actually join the covenant? Remember, I said it's a marriage covenant. And that's one of the reasons why the temple will be set up on the top of the mountain in Jerusalem, so that the nations can come and join the covenant, become a part of the bride. Well, we're going to get to that, as a matter of fact, as we continue through Isaiah. You'll see what will happen to those nations that choose to become in covenant with the Jewish people and the Israelite, the whole house of Israel in Jerusalem. What you're looking at in those pictures that we just showed you will be happening throughout the entire earth. As a matter of fact, there will be another stream going to the west from the temple, going down the mountain and out to the Mediterranean. So that same type of reforming, re-terraforming, or re-landscaping is going to take place all along the edges of the Mediterranean. But again, only if those nations come and submit themselves to the covenant, then this rebuilding will happen. This reforming of the entire earth will take place. So, like I say, the things that happened in the Torah seem like they're inconsequential. Here we had Rebecca going through a troubled pregnancy. Who could have known that the descendants of Esau would one day rule over Jerusalem, kill Rabbi John the Baptist, John the Immerser, attempt to kill Yeshua, and eventually lead to the downfall of all of Judea? And now you see why Adonai said, Esau I hate, Jacob I loved. And as we started out tonight, we saw how two boys in a pregnancy affected all of world history. And it was in the Torah.
Thank you for joining us as we explore the complexity and poetry of the book of Isaiah. Join us each week as we continue to examine the writings of the prophet Yeshayahu, bringing his words into our modern viewpoint.